Welcome to the Experts in Sport podcast, brought to you by the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences at Loughborough University.
Welcome to our special podcast series on the National Rehabilitation Centre. In this podcast, I met with Dr. Anna Lyon and Professor Richard Bibb. We discussed the Rehabilitation Technologies Network, the development of technology to enhance prostheses using 3D printing, and how this all fits together with the NRC. Hi Anna, hi Richard, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So today we're going to talk about the National Rehabilitation Centre, the Rehabilitation Technologies Network, and the development of technology to enhance prostheses using 3D printing. But before we do, can you guys provide us with a brief background into yourselves, starting with Anna?
Hey, so hi, my name is Anna Lyon, and I'm a postdoctoral researcher within the EPSRC Rehabilitation Technology Network Plus. As a researcher, I work on multi-material 3D printing, developing new technologies for healthcare, and in particular for rehabilitation. I'm also a very active member of the network. In my case, this means taking care of the early career researchers alongside with Dr. Kuchukilimas. And this means organizing events as well as creating opportunity for collaborations and secondments, both within other university partners and also within industries.
Thank you. We'll touch upon lots of those bits as we go through. And Richard, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm Richard Bibb. I'm Professor of Medical Applications of Design in the School of Design and Creative Arts at Loughborough University. And I am currently the technology theme lead for Loughborough's contribution to research into the National Rehabilitation Centre.
Perfect. So we've had an introductory podcast about the history of the NRC, but I'd like to know a bit more specifically, how's your work going to benefit from the NRC?
So the NRC really provides us with, I think, a nationally, if not internationally, unique opportunity to collaborate with all of the key stakeholders within an actual physical infrastructure. So our collaborations to date have been very productive. We've worked with clinicians and patients and manufacturers in areas of rehabilitation technology and assistive technology, prostheses and various other medical devices. But of course, we've all been remote in our own locations. So we've been in our university labs. We've visited the hospitals and they work with the patients there, and the manufacturers have their own locations. And all of those things required a certain amount of commitment to travel, to accommodate each other, learn each other's languages, and get used to each other's ways of working. The NRC will provide a co-location, a physical co-location, where everyone will be in the same building, working together routinely, day in, day out. And it will sort of accelerate that process because people will be working collaboratively, they'll be working together, they'll be in the same building, they'll speed up communications, enable people to work more interdisciplinary and become sort of more part of an actual team rather than, shall we say, remote collaborators.
There's a lot to be said about people being in the same space, and having heard from the introduction podcast around what the space is like, it does very much seem like it will be a shared space and not a Loughborough over there, Nottingham over there, this thing's here, that thing. It does seem like, and hopefully, and I've not seen the full plans, but for me, just being able to have a coffee and sitting down and saying, oh, that so-and-so is over there, it's worth you speaking to that person or this person. That kind of collaboration is real and really kind of helps develop things a lot quicker than they would if it's an email from here and a longer process. So I think that'd be really interesting to see if those developments do grow.
Yeah, I'm sure it will happen. I mean, one of the things is the sort of the serendipity, the corridor conversation, the bumping into someone, or being introduced to someone over a cup of coffee, and that's unpredictable. But we all know it works. The other thing would be about more sort of planned activities, the fact that there's lecture theatres in there, there's teaching facilities in there, there will be laboratories in there, in addition to all of the clinical facilities you'd normally expect in a medical facility. So in addition, the clinical people have access to those kinds of spaces as well. So hopefully that it'll be sort of more than just, should we say, people being in the same place at the same time, but the facilities and the equipment and the physical arrangement of the building has been designed to facilitate that cooperation and collaboration.
It sounds like true collaboration, as in the clinicians and the researchers and the patients are actually all together coming up with something, as opposed to the researcher speaking to the clinician and then the patient and then trying to piece together, well, I thought that's what they meant, I think that's what this is. And going back, it sounds like we can do all that quicker and easier in this kind of...
Correct. And that's certainly the intention. And one of the things that would be, speaking as an academic, one of the advantages for us will be that we will be immersed in that location. So even when it's not planned activity, you'll witness the activity. You'll see people coming and going. You'll see the patients arriving and leaving. You'll see whether they're coming in wheelchairs or crutches, and whether they have to use the lift or whether they can use the stairs. You will see how the clinicians operate and work. So even without having to formalize the sort of training, the exposure to witnessing the activity, it enables us to learn the realities of these applications. Is one of the difficulties for us as academics when we do research into a practical application of these technologies is witnessing the everyday realities of that. We can test things in the lab, we can simulate things, but it's never really the same as reality, and seeing the everyday practical implications is really valuable. It's something I've done in the past by visiting, by witnessing surgery and going into clinics, but of course you can only do that sporadically and periodically. The ability to be able to do that on a regular basis will be, I think, transformative, certainly for the academics, and I hope the reciprocal occurs for the clinicians as well, by being exposed to research, to training, to seminars, to working with PhD students and academics on a regular daily basis. They will sort of learn how we operate, what our needs are, and what we need in order to do the research that they want us to do. So I think that will all come together in this facility. And like I say, certainly with respect to rehabilitation, this will be unique in the UK. But it's just thinking more broadly about other medical specialities, it's relatively unique to be co-located in this way.
I think that co-location piece is, you know, we all think we understand other people's jobs and other people's roles, and we get a taste for it, an idea for it, and we hope that they understand what we do, but they often don't. And actually that working together collaboratively next to each other hopefully will give everybody a real in-depth understanding, and hopefully grow these things and increase the speed at which these things can develop through that co-location and collaboration. So that sounds really interesting in how that can move forward. Anna, you mentioned in your introduction some of the roles that you take on, and I know you're involved with the Rehabilitation Technologies Network. Can you give me some information around that, please?
So the Rehabilitation Technology Network is very interesting in relationship to the NRC, in particular because it is supported by and it will feed into this amazing project. In particular, the network is trying to, like, the aim of the network is to create a space and bridge the gap between the healthcare professionals, so we're talking about patient representative and like clinicians, and the technology experts. So it's trying to create a network of people that is nationwide, and is trying to promote this interaction and bring researchers that do not normally work in rehabilitation, but maybe they have technologies or materials that can be useful for rehabilitation purposes. So the idea is to bring all these people together and try to solve problem and create a network that then will feed into the NRC and create essentially a fertile soil for everything to move a little bit faster and a little bit easier. So the NRC is like a collaboration that was born in 2022, and it was initially created by a collaboration between the University of Loughborough and the University of Nottingham, and it was funded by EPSRC. And this has now developed to include over 340 members, but it doesn't include only research from industry or only researchers from academia. So we have both industrial partners and academic partners, as well as the voice of the patients that can tell us what was their experience in terms of both rehabilitation, dealing with a chronic disease, or dealing with the living with a sort of pathology. So all of these feeds into the Rehabilitation Technology Network Plus. That is where I work.
Okay. And so in terms of bringing all those people together, what's the specific purpose of that network?
So the idea is to create opportunities and create a chance for people to work together. So we want to provide researchers with the opportunity to enter the field of rehabilitation and solve real life problems. So a lot of the time, patients or clinicians will have problems, but they don't have solutions. And on the opposite side, we have people with technical expertise that have solutions, but they don't know what the problems are, or they think they know what the problems are, but they don't really, coming back to the same point. So bringing these people together and have this conversation is essential. We do that through our Grand Challenge workshops. And these are workshops where we can fund projects through the EPSRC grants that was funding the entire network. And we already funded 4 projects, and we are planning to fund 4 more. So these are all technology that revolve around, like, for example, wearables, pattern assisting patients and assistive devices at the moment. But we are expanding into other fields as well.
I like what you talked about there. So this podcast originally is experts in sport. And the tagline, if it were, is bridging the gap between academia and professional practice. So exactly what you just talked about is where I've often done a lot of these podcasts in the sport field, and we've moved over to be doing more in health because it's the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences. So we're touching upon that now. But some of the things that you mentioned there, you know, we may have researched these things. We don't know what the problems are, or we do know what the problems are. That implementation of research into practice is a huge thing in every single environment. And you know, this network and the NRC seems like the space where we're really actually, people have been trying to do this for a long, long time. Yes. But this is where we're actually providing ourselves with the opportunity to do this, because there's a lot of bureaucracy systems that get in the way of people who are well-intentioned in trying to make the right things happen, but are just kind of sometimes burdened by some of those pieces that sit in the way. And both this network and the NRC seem like they are going to provide you all with the opportunity to do this really well.
But on your point, I also think that engineers and physical science experts sometimes have a hard time bridging into the NHS and healthcare environment. So the NRC and the network are also trying to provide like an easy route, like a direct route into this field. So to try and bring people together and trying to create an easier way for these two worlds to collaborate and come together into one.
That's brilliant, because I just talked about bureaucracy, and obviously we work in universities and we get frustrated by that. My wife works in the NHS. Yeah. And when I was studying doing an MBA, almost every single case study about how not to do things was on the NHS. And I know that Pip and Miriam and Mark were really keen to stress that this is something new. This is something different. I think Mark even mentioned that, you know, there are issues with the fact that it is NHS, because you've got to go through certain governances and things like that to make sure everything's correct. But this is different. They were keen to stress that this is not a hospital.
No.
You know, and these, you're not having wards, and there's huge differences in what this is, and this is kind of the next level of thinking. So let's hope that none of that bureaucracy gets in the way from any of our institutions or the NHS or anything, and you guys can get on with what you're trying to get on with. You mentioned there about funding, and yeah. I know with the network, there's Grand Challenge workshops, and can you tell us a little bit about them and how they've moved forward with some projects that you've been doing?
Yeah, so at the moment we have had 2 Grand Challenge workshops already, and we're planning, we have the next one literally next week. So people can apply to get the space into the workshop, and then we will fund projects and ideas that come out of the workshop itself. So during the workshop, we have experts talking about what are the challenges that they face, what are the problems that they see within the healthcare and clinical settings, as well as patients that provide their own expertise. And then we have technical experts that will provide some of the solutions, some of the things they're working on. All the people that are in the room have either expertise or both. Sometimes we have experts that double in both, but most of the time they will have either clinical or technical expertise, and they come together to try and find a solution to the problems. So these are real life problems from people that have seen it and have experienced it, and then technical experts that come together with the clinicians, with the healthcare professionals, and try to find solutions. So, for example, a couple of the ones that have been funded up to now, one is based on AI. So it's an AI-empowered mobile application system for amputee gait training and assessment. So the idea is to use this new technology that is AI to try and understand and better the gait of amputees, so lower limb amputees. We have funded this project because we found that it fitted within the EPSRC goal of technology development, as well as our network goal of connecting and find real life applications. The important thing to say is that at this workshop, people have to talk to each other. Like, we force people to talk to each other. Like, they can't just come and sit next to their friend, spend their entire workshop like that, and like then go home and just do whatever they were doing before. Our goal is to bring people together, force them to have this conversation. And while we have a limited amount of funding, so we can fund just a couple of projects per workshop, so many conversations have kept going outside of the workshop. And myself, I've been part of one of those, and I have kept contacts with one of the professors. We had gone through like making applications and try and develop some of the ideas that came out of the workshop itself. So it's not just about the single individual grant, but is creating that network, that connections, and getting people to understand that there is more than their research. There is like a whole new field. And the other thing is, while the network was funded by the University of Loughborough and Nottingham, it is important to stress that it is of national reach. So we are interested in getting people from the entirety of the country. We don't want to be limited to these two universities or even just to the Midlands. We want to get people from everywhere. And we've been successful in involving a lot of people, and we have about 340 members at the moment. And and the interesting part is some of the projects that were funded were also from, like, it's not just from industry or just from academia. It's a blend of the two. And I think it's quite an unusual thing to find.
I agree. I'm just looking through there at some of these other areas that you're talking about as well. So exoskeletons, I've actually done a podcast specifically with Dr. Mike Craven, where we talked about exoskeletons. So that one, go and listen to that podcast if you want to hear more. I was just really interested in you on here as well. You've got non-invasive breathing pattern assessment, monitoring and retraining. I've done another podcast previously on the Experts in Sport podcast around this, and it may be with the same people. So they were looking at asthma, and they were looking at the ways of using biomechanical kind of assessments to assess breathing patterns. So many people have not actually got asthma, and people are being misdiagnosed. So again, just talking about networks and things like that, just from this conversation here, I'm going, well, if that's not the same people, then there's certainly some knowledge here around that. So some at Loughborough, and some that the person on the podcast wasn't from Loughborough. So we can talk afterwards, see if they're connected in that. I guess they probably are. So Richard, if we just move on, obviously, you're a professor. You've probably been around these kind of things before and these developments, and not wanting to be negative, I think we'll focus on the positive of what the NRC is. But what kind of issues have you come across in the past with trying to develop these collaborative type projects? Because I know this, you know, this is the gold standard. This is what everybody wants to be doing.
So, yeah, I think it is difficult. People in the NHS are, as we all know from the media, the news, and our own experiences, are tremendously burdened. It's a stressful time. The system is at capacity, or a lot of the systems are at or even above capacity. So it's very difficult to initiate research with people whose day job is taking up all of their capacity. So one of the things, hopefully, with the NRC will give the clinicians space and time to engage in research and to direct and be involved in research in a way that they might find difficult in a tertiary hospital environment where the pressures are so enormous. So this will be a specialist unit specializing in rehabilitation. That in itself is relatively new and unique. There are rehabilitation centers within hospitals, but as far as I know, this is the first dedicated single unit for rehabilitation. Rehabilitation is also perhaps a little bit of a Cinderella subject in academic terms and in clinical terms, in terms of funding and its perception. A lot of funding and things tends to be directed towards life-saving things, cancer treatments and treatments for long-term diseases and things. And of course, that makes perfect sense. That's the first thing we want to do. But we're coming to the point now that where we're extending life. People are living longer. We are having better outcomes from things like cancer and heart disease. But then that begs the next question. You're not going to die, or your life will be extended, but what about the quality of that life and your independence and your ability to work, for example? So one of the main aims now is that rehabilitation has to come up the priority order to match up with these other developments so that it forms a continuum, so that you are treated, you recover, and then just instead of just being sort of left at that stage, you are rehabilitated back into a higher level of fitness and health that enables you, for example, to return to work. And our return to work rates in the UK are not as good as other countries. So we know this, and that's something we need to work on. So I think that's going to be a bit of a game changer. And hopefully the NRC will be a sort of a beacon for that. And I mean, hopefully there will be others in the future where people will see this working and they'll say, yeah, rehabilitation is important. It's economically favourable, not just in terms of people's quality of life, but like I say, if people can return to work, be more economically self-sustaining, reduces the burden on the state, reduces the burden on carers and families. So hopefully it's all a bit of a win-win-win in those circumstances. Clearly, the longer people live healthy lifestyles or are returning to a healthy lifestyle and being active, they're out of the NHS and not returning to it with recurrence or relapse. So there's hopefully this will be that sort of, like I say, that leadership role there nationally. And we do have to keep remembering it is National Rehabilitation Centre, as Anna said. So hopefully we will see this replicated in other places, but this will be the first one that is a dedicated unit.
I was going to summarize what you said with win, 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 and you stole it before I got there. So well done. Because in the introduction podcast again, Miriam mentioned the economic benefits of this, and it isn't about the economic benefits. That's just a bonus that actually, if we rehab people properly, they are, if for want of a better word, less of a burden on the NHS. But I think, as they also touched on the introduction, this being person-centric, it's very much about people living their best life. And that's the main point. It just so happens, if that happens through this research, that they become less of a burden on the NHS and they have a fuller life. And economically, if you want to go even further, well, they boost the economics of the country. So this win-win-win is all there for everybody. So have you got examples of where this is already happening in terms of collaborations with clinicians and patients and potentially industry, and where things are kind of moved forward already, even without where we're going to?
Yeah, there's pockets of activity. I mean, the one thing I was going to mention, it's co-located with the Defence Medical Rehabilitation Centre, and that's not by accident. So there will be a clustering and a sharing of the experiences across there. But the Defence Medical Rehabilitation Centre has very much that aim of returning people to fight what they call fighting fitness. So that's sort of key to their raison d'etre. That's what it's there for, is to keep people active, get them back to work as soon as possible. And their success rates in getting people back into fitness for work is better than the national picture. So hopefully there'll be cross learnings there, and there are agreements about that, about sharing learning, sharing training, and even sharing facilities. So so that co-location is worth mentioning. And I think in lots of ways that is also an example of what you just asked about, where is a good example. So the way that that centre operates with its prosthetics provision on site, for example, is a very good example of how that that collaboration can work. In terms of the sort of work I've been involved in, we've been looking at things like immobilization splints for rheumatoid arthritis, for example. So that's a piece of work that's gone relatively well. We're in the process of trying to, should we say, push that over its next boundary and into actual practice. But what we're trying to achieve there really is streamlining the process. So I think what's important to stress with a lot of what our aims are with these research projects is we don't want to replace people or make people redundant or automate things or use AI and robots and all that kind of stuff to put people out of jobs. We're very much about empowering the clinicians. They've got the expertise and the experience. What we're trying to do is find ways of empowering them to do their job more efficiently or more productively. So if we take the example of the wrist splints. So at the moment, like a lot of these assistive technologies, rehabilitation technologies, it's reliant on quite a lot of craft skills. So you go see a specialist, and that specialist will then physically make a wrist splint for you whilst you sit there in the clinic. So you have to sit there, they draw around your hand, they cut it out of plastic, they heat the plastic up, bend it, and they will fit it to you until it's perfect. That takes anywhere but for a half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, and perhaps could take longer for a difficult case. If you want a second splint, you have to do all that again. And that's it. You get given you two splints and you're sent home. What we're trying to do is digitize that process. So can we take that process and turn it from one that's a manual craft into a digital design? So we scan the patient's hand and arm, but using exactly the same design principles, we have created a CAD approach that the prosthetist can use. So they don't need to come to us. They don't need to come to a designer or a computer-aided design specialist. They can do this themselves. They follow exactly the same principles, but they do it in a virtual environment instead of physically. They can design the splint, and then they can 3D print it. 3D print it, give it to the patient, check it fits. Now, that is not necessarily that much quicker than the current process, but it becomes quicker from this point on. Because then if you want another one, you just press print again. If you want another one, you'd press print again. And you can have as many as you like, because they don't actually cost a lot to print. And if you lose one, we can print you another one. If you break one, we can print you another one. If you want a green one and a blue one and a red one, if you want a shiny one to go out in the evening and you want a brown one for gardening, or if you want one for dishwashing, you can have one. Whereas at the moment, if you want another one, you have to go back to the clinic and have it made again. So we're eliminating clinic visits, we're eliminating travel, we're eliminating inconvenience for the patient. We're accelerating the process for the clinical providers by separating the manufacturing phase from the design phase. And it can actually, in theory, all be done virtually if the person could be scanned appropriately, potentially at their GP or a local place rather than having to travel to a big city. And this translates to other forms of treatment as well, such as prosthetics. And I'm involved in another project called PIDL, looking at assistive technologies. And we are also funding feasibility study projects that are also looking at that ability to scan patients in the home or in a local environment, have that data sent to a central area where assistive technologies and rehabilitation devices can be manufactured for them. So, but over time, hopefully that would also come to the point where it's production on demand at the point of care. And this is a new trend that's very much being pushed in medicine, where we're rather than relying on massive factories churning out identical objects by the thousand, we are producing customized or personalized devices at the point of care. So there'd be a mini factory or 3D printing facility within a hospital. You go in, you're scanned, the device is designed, it's printed for you there and then, and you go home with it. And then, like I say, if you want another one, you just print one out and stick it in the post. So that's one example. The NRC gives us an opportunity to have a test bed, a place where we could actually do that. We will have a lab space. We'll have the patients, we'll have the clinicians. So we could actually implement that as a pilot and do proof of concept. We could measure the impact. We could do the economics. So that's something that we're very much looking forward to about. And it's also about this co-location. So me and my researchers could be in that environment actually providing that pilot study with the clinicians, with the patients, and hopefully prove the economic argument as well as the practical and design arguments.
There's a few really interesting pieces you mentioned there. And I asked in the introduction podcast, I asked Pip and Mark and Miriam around, you know, in 10, 15, 20 years time, what would success look like? And Mark came up with a really interesting one that he said, not in 10 years time, but a bit further, it would be amazing if something like the NRC didn't need to exist because we had a virtual kind of network where these things happen. And I just thought your point was really, really interesting with that, because how far away are we from a place with the 3D printing where somebody could self-scan this and it's eventually just sent to them? I'm just thinking there that one of the big kind of systems level problems, and I'm guessing at this, but particularly for people with lower limb injuries, is the transport in terms of getting into the hospital. It's a huge barrier. So is there going to be a position where you think, you know what, this is something that could be almost self-scanned, or, you know, will it get to that level, or is it that's a long way away? Don't even mention that.
It's not so much that. So there are technological barriers to things, and some of those need to be overcome. Technology is going accelerating very, very fast. It's very, very cheap. You can get LiDAR on an iPhone Pro, and you can scan things yourself. So one of my colleagues scanned his garden, for example, and showed it to me the other day, and it's a pretty good scan. There are some practical level difficulties of that as well, and that is it's not as easy as it sounds.
Yeah.
And a lot of the issues about rehabilitation do require that personal contact and that expertise. So I have, like I say, that we've in another network, we funded a project that looking exactly this. I was talking to them yesterday. So if you want to scan, say you are lower limb, transtibial amputee, so you've lost the bone, can you scan your own limb and send that back? And this is what this project is trying to achieve. It's quite difficult. And if you wanted to see how difficult it is, try and take a picture of the bottom of your foot with your phone and then do that 100 times.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. You know, just the physical ergonomics of it are very, very challenging, particularly when you've only got one leg. So, and if that has to be done in a standing position, you're going to ask someone to stand on one leg and then reach down and scan their residuum, which is likely to make them fall over. So there's a lot of practical issues about that that mean that there may be safe ways of doing that. But generally speaking, yeah, the technology will get to the point where I think it can facilitate that kind of thing. But it doesn't get you around the expertise that's in the head of the person that's doing that. So so this is where I think I'm not so much with Mark in saying, well, you know, in 20 years' time, we won't have rehabilitation centres. I think you will, because people will still have accidents. People will still fall over rock climbing or fall off horses or whatever their sport is. So even if we cure lots of terrible diseases, we'll still have accidents, I'm sure. So I think the really key part is, to what degree can we redistribute that? Could this be in your local GP? And that would be the difference. So it might not be that you do it at home yourself with your iPhone, but perhaps you just go to your nearest gym, your GP or your local health center, and the data is captured there. You're already seeing this with diagnostics. So I think it's in Nottingham just now, they're launching a diagnostics center. And what they're creating are essentially local medical facilities that are on a town or regional basis, which just specialize in doing the diagnostics. And that's to effectively keep people out of the hospital. So the hospitals become more about treatment and people's access to rapid diagnostics is faster. That's at the beginning of the process, if you like. First stage is diagnostic, then treatment. You can imagine this also being for rehab. So you're, rather than going to a central city center hospital, you will go to your nearest local center. So yeah, I think that redistributed view is definitely on the cards.
To build on that point, there is also a lot of research that goes into making some of these diagnosis devices more portable or more economic, so that they could be like introduced in a local center. Because at the moment, some of the machines are extremely expensive, extremely hard to get, maybe very encompassing, so they will need an entire room. And a lot of GPs or local centre don't have that luxury. However, if you can now make it maybe handheld, or you can make it very cheap, That can be done through miniaturizing technique, including 3D printing, because we've seen an increase of the use of 3D printing to develop technology that already exists, but make it cheaper. So it's more affordable, more accessible, so that all of these can be done by your local GP and maybe even during like a house visit. Yeah. So you can have the GP being equipped with all these technology, you know, how now they have like an oximeter, like stethoscopes, and I don't know, like a pressure pump and everything else. They can be equipped with something, with a scanner. So they can, when they come to your house to take your vitals or whatever, to make a house visit, they can also scan your limb. So there is like a combination of trying to digitize and trying to develop the technology to like delocalize the need for the patient to move, as well as creating the opportunity for healthcare practitioner and clinician to provide these localized healthcare opportunities.
I think a piece that I'd like to ask really around this is, you're talking about, you know, we know the NRC, you know, is a project, very collaborative project. It's local to us, but it's a national project, you know, a lot of it being led by Nottingham and Loughborough, with many, many partners everywhere. When I spoke to Pip and Miriam and those guys in the introduction, they're also keen to stress that they wanted this, and this is a flagship and to be internationally renowned. So with regard to your guys' work around the 3D printing side, how much of your work is already looking at that international part? Because I'm thinking about other countries, less developed countries, and whether there is opportunity there for scanning, 3D printing, and those, and the economic enhancement that might help in those countries. Is there things like that happening already, or is that not happening yet?
Yeah, that's true. So I'm connected to the Global Disability Innovation Hub, and they are a partner in the other network I mentioned, the TIDAL network, and that has a broader view of assistive technology, including developing nations. And you're right, there's two aspects to it. One is, can you adapt the technologies to suit their environments, which can be obviously radically different. If you're operating in sub-Saharan Africa, is radically different to working in a city centre in the UK. Just the physical environment, you know, the heat, the temperature, the dust, the lack of equipment, lack of facilities, lack of reliable electricity even. But there is also the possibility of what's sort of leapfrog. So that is where you develop a technology in, say, in the UK that is quicker and cheaper, more efficient, more localized, and then translate that directly into growing economies and skipping whatever the stage was before. So you think a lot of places in Africa, for example, never bothered with landlines for telephony. They just skipped it. They didn't have telephones. Mobile came along. They just went straight to mobile because it's cheaper, it's easy. Just stick a load of masts up. You don't have to dig up the roads and put cables down. So you can leapfrog. And that's what we're looking for in some of these technologies, where if you look at one of our typical UK prosthetic clinic, for example, and try to translate that to an emerging nation, that's going to be very problematic in terms of things like training people, the facilities, the skills, because there's a lot of, the skill is very much in the hands of the people doing it. If we come up with a process that's more digital, where some of the manufacture is semi-automated, or even some of the design can be semi-automated, you lower that barrier to entry in terms of the training required. But also this idea of remote manufacture means the manufacturing could be in a truck, you know, so the truck could go around remote rural locations, treating people locally that way. Or it could just be that the truck goes to the remote location, scans people, beams it back to the city centre where everything is provided and then sent back out again. So there is these opportunities, particularly with things like delivery at the point of care, redistributed manufacture, that will enable, hopefully, direct translation to some of these other growing economies, leapfrogging, say, the stages that we might have been at, say, 10 years ago.
It makes a lot of sense.
And building on that, we also, if we can separate the point of care to the expertise, we have now access to a world of experts. Because if you can scan the patient anywhere in the world, then any expert from anywhere else can pick up the scan, they have the software, and they can do the job. that means that you can delocalize the expertise and now have access to a wider range of experts, meaning that potentially in a pretty far future, but you know, we could be able to access and delegate that expertise and be able to maybe cut time on how quickly a patient can receive care. Because things like splints, for example, they are extremely important and they can change the life of the patient and the quality of life. So having the experts that doesn't have to travel like hours or doesn't have to come to a specific location or have even access to an expert at all sometime can change someone's experience, someone's life. So having that possibility of delocalize and have access to different experts and create a sort of almost a library of people that can do the same job can really help expedite and share the knowledge, not just within the UK, but within the most wide concept of it.
Yeah, I think that's the really important point with the speed type of thing you mentioned there. You can use many of these experts from all over the place, but the speed of development here to help the patient is, you know, is of utmost importance, because any of those physical disabilities and the mental health impacts upon that, the longer you are there without assistance and development, the worse things potentially can get for you. So I think that speed's a really, really valid point that you've added there. I mean, we may have touched upon some of these things already, because I was going to finish off looking at kind of the future and projects you guys are working on. I think in terms of the 3D printing side, I think we've started to touch upon a lot of that future stuff. But is there anything else that you'd like to add around, you know, where's the future in this space and how does that work with the NRC and further developments?
That's a great question. I think there's so many opportunities, a lot of them not necessarily related to the kind of work that we do in 3D printing. But if we do just think about 3D printing, I've mentioned things like wrist splints and things like that, but there's also customization and personalization of rehabilitation technology. That could be as simple as custom making a crutch for a particular person for their hand or their height or their weight. We're also involved in projects with Leicester Diabetes Centre looking at protecting the diabetic foot by producing custom designed and manufactured insoles that will reduce the pressure and forces acting on feet, which could lead with diabetic people can lead to ulcers. So we're trying to prevent things as well. So some of this rehabilitation technology would also come back to the notion that's increasingly being talked about rehabilitation, which I don't know if the others touched on in those things. But I think that's it's an interesting idea, and that is the idea of preparing people for whatever their intervention is going to be, so that when they go into that intervention, they're fitter, healthier, stronger, better prepared for it, and therefore their rehabilitation after the intervention is much more accelerated. So we can think about things like that. Like I said, the diabetic foot is more about prevention rather than rehabilitation. But those sort of technologies are equally applicable to other things like orthoses and prostheses. I think in terms of some of the other potential sort of future big wins, I think, like I say, point of care manufacturer of all of those kind of anything that has to be personalized or customized to fit you, I think that's where we see a lot of our developments going. I'm sure it's the same pattern in your projects. Yeah.
We all know that a one size fits all does never work. Like no one is happy when they had a piece of clothing that is like one size. We all know that will look horrible on everyone. And the same concept applies to anything in healthcare, from medicine to rehabilitation to anything that goes into a patient's, like goes to affect a patient's life. And we see it literally with medicines, like how many times we have to, like, I don't know, break a tablet in half or in quarters, and you never get the right amount. It's like, yeah, maybe roughly it's kind of okay,
it's close enough.
Yeah, exactly. It's better than nothing. But you know, and the same thing goes for like any prosthetics and any assistive device, anything that can be personalized makes it for a much better result. And something that we must consider and we need to not forget is the healthcare impact on their mindset and on their like behavior. because when we talk about healthcare and rehabilitation, a lot of the time we think, oh yeah, like they can't walk or they can't perform this activity or that, but we forget about the burden that it puts on the patients and how much that affects their everyday life and their interaction with the other people and with going back to work, for example. And sometimes those things can be solved as simply as by putting a pattern on a cast. So for example, when we see children, children are very flexible and adaptable, but sometimes they don't like things that look too clinical, too white, too scary. So sometimes we're just putting like a Spider-Man pattern or like an Iron Man pattern on a piece of equipment. Instantly, they want to engage. Instantly, they are more prone in learning and interacting with this object. So 3D printing gives that opportunity to personalize from both a point of view of simple aesthetic to actual usefulness and actual practicality of how you go about your life using that construct and that object.
Yeah, we've done some work on that. So the work I mentioned with the wrist splints is one of the benefits of that was using the software approach that we have and we've piloted. The patient gets to choose colours, finishes, and patterns. There's a limitation to that, but at least they get to choose. And that does, we have evidence that does raise compliance and people are more likely to use a device if they find it aesthetically pleasing as opposed to something that looks like it stigmatizes them. Yeah. So we've also done some work on with a PhD student a few years ago looking at expressive prostheses. And these are people who decorate their prosthetic limbs to suit their personality. So that might be replicating tattoos. So I've seen them where someone has a tattoo on their leg and they've replicated that tattoo on their prosthetic covering. Some people want to cover them up and hide them. Other people want to express them. Now, currently, because of the limitations and demands on the NHS, they will give you a prosthesis, but they won't decorate it. If you want to have a decorated, personalised one, then you'll have to either do it yourself or go to some specialists or charities. Now, it would be nice to be able to get to the point where that just is a free bonus. You know, you need to say, well, we're going to 3D print it anyway. If you want to 3D print it with a pattern on it in a different colour, it doesn't make any difference to the price. So you go ahead, knock yourself out.
That would be great, wouldn't it, if that can happen all on the NHS? Because as you were talking, I was just thinking, you know, you mentioned being stigmatised and particularly thinking around children. And, you know, right, children in the playground with some kind of old prosthetic, it stands out. And it might be that kids are put off by that, you know, seeing this kid who's got something that's a bit weird and a bit different and children don't really know how to respond. You go in with one that has Spider-Man all over it, you're the coolest kid in the playground. And, you know, that mental health side and that acceptance from everybody, I'm sure would play a huge role in that. So it'd be really exciting to see that move into the NHS. I'm just conscious that we're basically running out of time. We've had a really good conversation around the benefits that to your work of the NRC. Really interesting to hear about the developments you've had already with the prosthesis and 3D printing, whether that be kind of locally, nationally and internationally, and in how you've already developed and where this could move forward. And interesting to hear around the networks and everybody coming together in able to work on these kind of problems and solutions. But one final question, I suppose, would be, are there any people out there that you want to reach out to? You know, because I know some of this, all of this happens in collaboration, and there might be kind of industry, or is there any kind of shout out you'd want us to put on the podcast to say, look, if you're interested in this kind of stuff, just come and speak to us, because we're really interested in working with people in this space. I know the NRC is hopefully going to bring that organically together. But there's an opportunity now. We have a fairly big reach with this podcast internationally as well. 70% are UK, 30% of this is internationally listened to. So putting you on the spot here. Anywhere you want to reach out to?
I think generally speaking, from my perspective, the work I'm involved in, I'd like to encourage designers, product designers, industrial designers to engage in that kind of area. Think about medical devices as something to get engaged with, but not just the sort of the ones that you're most familiar with, but to think about the, like I say, the kind of Cinderella subject, things that are typically not glamorous, not deemed as desirable items, you know, wheelchairs, crutches, things like that. They don't have to look horrible. They have to be functional. But it would be nice to add some aesthetic value to these things. With other products we buy with a view to quality and aesthetic values. I think about our furniture. You know, your chair or your table has a function, and you want it to be a certain quality, but you choose different ones for different environments or different tastes. And it'd be nice to reflect that with rehabilitation technologies as well, and not just accept the fact that they have to just be sort of brown and ugly or white or whatever, and get engaged with that. But I think the other call really would be to patients themselves to be more demanding, to get involved. So we will have patient involvement in all of these activities. But there are lots of projects like the networks that we've talked about where we're very keen to foster and encourage patient participation. And so if there are people listening who are going through rehab, maybe you're having physio, I'm having physio right now because I've got a running injury. If you see these opportunities to get involved, then please do, because ultimately you're the recipient of this work. And get involved, volunteer for these things. If you see studies advertised looking for participants, please consider contributing and giving us your experiences that will help us to develop things ultimately that are of benefit to you, rather than just, should we say, satisfying the technological requirement.
Thanks. I think, shout out there, industry, patients, and I'm sure researchers can go on the NRC website. They can contact any of us and we can all throw it around to different places. But in terms of rehabilitation networks, is there anything that you'd want to put out there?
I will just put a call for anyone that is interested in rehabilitation and want to find an in into the field. So anyone that thinks they have a technology, a material, or even just an idea, they would like to think, oh, actually, I think this might work in rehab. Or like, I have an interest in rehab, but maybe they are in industry or they work in a different field. We can provide that opportunity to enter the field. We have schemes, we have way to help, in particular, like early career researchers. So please, you can go on our website, and is the rehabtechnologies.net. And so please come and visit us. We have the networks, and we can put you in contact with both industries and university partners. So please come talk to us. We're always welcome. You're always welcome, and we're always happy to give you information or help.
With that, is there any specific funding opportunities that are out there? Because I know people are interested in funding to help them with these things.
So at the current moment, the workshop is the main way to get funding. But we're going to have in the future some small funding for early career researchers, so to help them enter the field and like kickstart their career in this particular area.
Brilliant. Thanks, Anna. And thanks, Richard. Thanks both of you for coming on. And as you guys have just mentioned, any of those shout outs there, do get in touch. NRC website, Rehab Technologies website, or approach Anna or Richard, or even me if you want to, and I'll put you in the right space to kind of speak to the right people. But thank you. Really appreciate you coming on, and wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you so much, Warren.
Thanks for listening to the Experts in Sport podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, then please contact me, Martin Foster, at m.foster@alborough.ac.uk. Thanks for listening. See you next time.